From the KTO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with this news. Governor-elect Mike Dunleavy's transition team will receive advice from former Republican Governor Sean Parnell on the proposed gas pipeline. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchiman reports on the latest update for the transition plan.
Governor Bill Walker has made advancing a gas line one of his signature efforts. But it will be Walker's predecessor that Governor-elect Dunleavy's transition will be turning to as a special advisor on the project. Transition Chairman Tuckerman Babcock says Sean Parnell is well-positioned for it. The announcement echoed at a press conference Friday in the hangar at Security Aviation in Anchorage.
No one knows more about the project than the former governor. Sean Parnell and his previous work on AKLNG moved the project along to a point it had really never reached before, and he stands ready to evaluate where we are as we move forward and advise the governor-elect.
Babcock also announced Dick Randolph will advise the transition on constitutional amendments. He led the effort to abolish Alaska's income tax in 1980. Dunleavy has supported guaranteeing permanent fund dividends in the Constitution, and he suggested the state should limit revenue for state government in the Constitution. He's pointed to Colorado as a potential inspiration for an amendment. Colorado requires voter approval for any tax increases. And Dunleavy wants to lower the spending limit in the state constitution. Dunleavy announced the Transition Policy Council will have two co-chairmen. They are John Moeller, a Juneau commercial fisherman who served as senior rural affairs advisor to Parnell, and Brett Huber, who managed Dunleavy's campaign and will be a senior policy advisor in the administration. Moeller says the transition will examine the role of the Tribal Advisory Council formed by Walker. Moeller notes that Dunleavy has proposed a rural sub-cabinet that could serve a similar objective. Huber says Alaskans can provide their ideas about how to implement Dunleavy's agenda.
We're already hearing comments from Alaskans on how best to help put this plan in place.
Alaskans can submit their ideas through the transition website, GovernorMikeDunleavy.com. Dunleavy says much work needs to be done in the next 3.5 weeks.
We have a very short window, a very short time frame to do this.
Dunleavy will be sworn in on December 3rd. In Anchorage, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Fall whaling concluded in Utqiagvik in late October and was characterized this year by events that brought both additional excitement but also sorrow to a usually celebratory time for the community. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig was in Utqiagvik for the end of whaling season and has this story.
It's early evening a few days after the last whale has been brought on shore in Utqiagvik, and Ross and Justina Wilhelm's house is crowded with about 20 friends and relatives. They're setting out donuts and pineapple cake, arranging plates of whale meat and unalak, which is boiled whale blubber and skin, and bagging up servings of whale for people to take home.
Okay, and then if the muktuk is small, you guys need to put two, please.
Two muktuk, if it's small.
Ross Wilhelm is a whaling captain, and his crew, with help from others, brought in the final whale of the season. His wife, Justina, is responsible for organizing tonight's cruise serving, an event where anyone in the community can come get a portion of the whale. When everything is ready, the group joins hands and prays. Ross's mother, Laku Kanungnana, says the prayer in Inupiaq, expressing gratitude for the whale they're about to serve. The prayer is broadcast over VHF radio, along with the family's house number and an announcement that they're ready to serve. Soon there's a steady stream of people revolving through the house, yelling congratulations and trading hugs in the Wilhelm's living room. Ross Wilhelm spends the evening shaking hands and greeting visitors.
It's just what puts us together is the whale, the bowhead whale. Just gets us all together. Hi, John.
Thanks for coming here. Yes.
Wilhelm says that the usual energy around fall whaling was boosted this year, coming off a big success at the meeting of the International Whaling Commission in September. At that meeting, the IWC made some key changes to the bowhead whale quota that Alaska subsistence hunters had been pushing for. But on the other end of the emotional spectrum, the community just experienced a profound loss. About a month ago, Captain Roxy Oyagok Jr. and crew member Ron Kenny-Urich were killed in a whaling accident off the coast of Utqiagvik when their boat capsized while towing a whale to shore. Ross Wilhelm says that the crew serving is a time of joy, and that seems to be the main emotion in the room during the event. But in conversations around town, it's clear there's still a lot of pain related to the accident. It's also an important reminder of something that whalers already know well, that whaling can be dangerous. Wilhelm says that he was shaken by what happened.
I'd make myself look bad if I said it doesn't scare me, you know, because I'd be stupid if I didn't say that, you know, like of course it does.
Despite what happened this season and a close call he himself had in the past, Wilhelm isn't deterred from the hunt. He says sometimes things happen that are outside your control, but the only thing you can do is renew your vigilance when it comes to basic safety.
Steer left, steer right, stay straight, you know, watch the stern, watch the bow.
He's not the only one thinking along these lines. The Barrel Whaling Captains Association is reviewing what happened and will be discussing what safety lessons may be drawn from the accident at upcoming meetings. That's according to Crawford Putkatuk, a whaling captain and board member. He says that many in the community are still mourning the loss of the two men, but the overarching dedication to continuing the tradition of whaling remains strong.
For the most part, our people are able to rebound and continue our life, our culture, and knowing that Roxy and Ron would have it no other way. They would want us to continue our culture.
Fall whaling concluded in Utqiagvik with hunters bringing in a total of 19 whales, the full number of whales permitted by their quota. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
The federal government is suing to recover more than $2.5 million spent cleaning up a World War II-era tugboat that sank in Juneau's Gastineau Channel. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
The Justice Department filed suit Thursday against R.D. Robinson, a Juneau sculptor who took possession of the MV Challenger in 2014. A previous owner had used the converted 96-foot tugboat as a floating bed and breakfast in Seattle. Robinson had planned to use it as an artist studio. But the aging vessel's wooden hull had deteriorated, and the vessel sank in 2015. The Coast Guard raised the tug and towed it away for disposal using funds from the Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund. It billed Robinson 2 years later, but hasn't been paid, according to a complaint filed in federal court. In a 2016 interview with the Juneau Empire, Robinson disputed he was the Challenger's lawful owner and therefore responsible. Governor Bill Walker signed Senate Bill 92 this year, which creates a new titling program requiring owners to register their boats. The bill also streamlines impound procedures. Derelict vessels are a growing problem in Alaska. The MV Lumberman, another World War II-era tug, currently lies abandoned in Juneau's tidelands. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And finally, today the U.S. District Court in Anchorage heard arguments in a case that could determine whether millions of acres of Arctic waters should be closed to oil development. A few months after taking office, President Donald Trump issued an executive order to reopen large parts of the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas for offshore oil drilling. Former President Barack Obama had withdrawn those areas, citing environmental risks. Environmental groups are legally challenging President Trump's ability to undo Obama's withdrawal. In court, they argued that Congress gave presidents the power to take offshore areas off the table for oil development, but not the other way around. An attorney with the Department of Justice argued this reading of the law was too narrow and not what Congress intended. The outcome of the case could have near-term impacts. The Trump administration has tentatively proposed holding an oil lease sale in the Beaufort Sea next year.